Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Bags and bags of humming machinery. I've never seen so many knobs. We're going to have to do something, Charlie. Try pushing that button now. No? How about that one? No, not that one either. I know. I'll try pushing this one. Put my hat, would you? There's a good fella.
Thanks for downloading the latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. In my humble opinion, this is a blockbuster. Bill Binney, the former NSA technical director, talks about his meeting with the current CIA director about his theorem of the leak, not hack, of the contents of servers at the Democratic National Committee. And for this, the meeting and the theorem, he has been widely smeared by the corporate media. And he's going to respond to those smears in some detail in the conversation that's coming up. This is all made possible by loyal supporters and subscribers who kick in a few bucks every month to support me here at the podcast. People including Terry Paris, Carla Mahoney, Bill Janetta, and here's Terry Paris again. She's got more than one subscription. Thanks, Terry. I invite you to join them. Visit peterbcollins.com, click on menu, pull it down, click on become a subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page. And in minutes, you can be all set with a subscription to this podcast. Former NSA technical director Bill Binney returns to the Peter B. Collins podcast today after being smeared in ways that are just unbelievable. It started with The Intercept earlier this week when James Risen, a talented and award-winning reporter, co-authored a piece that described a meeting that Bill Binney had with the CIA director, Mike Pompeo, during the last week in October. And the article was so loaded with bias and character assassination that I thought that was the low point. But in the ensuing days, it's actually gotten worse. And Bill Binney, who appears to be amused by at least some of this, joins us today to talk about all this. Bill, thanks for being on the program.
Well, thanks for having me back, Peter.
Well,
always good to talk to you.
And as you know, I have been listening to your commentary on this since I believe we first discussed it in August of 2016. And the claim, central to the Russiagate narrative, that the DNC servers were hacked by Russian agents and that that material was then transferred to WikiLeaks, has never held up to close scrutiny. And you have advanced a different idea, a different theory, that it was an insider who enabled the leak of this information and that it's possible the Russians were not involved in any way, shape, or form. And you're now being pilloried for having independent thoughts, having evidence-based arguments, and for having met with the CIA director, apparently at the behest of the president.
Yeah, and the whole point of that meeting was to find out what the facts are. I mean, the president told Director Pompeo that he wanted him to talk to me to get some facts. I mean, what it says to you is they're trying to find truth here,
mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a good thing, you know. And I went in trying to do the best I could to help them out, and I still would. But you know, one of the if you go back and look at the intelligence community assessment of this, the 14-page report initially back in earlier in 2017, you know, on Annex B, page 13, it says, first of all, they're talking about all their judgments that the Russians did it, and then on page 13 it says, Judgments are not intended to imply that we have proof that shows something to be a fact. Well, that just discredits their whole report, you know. So again, I assume that he's not getting any facts from CIA or NSA or FBI. He's seeking facts and he's not getting it from the intelligence community. This is really bad, though, if you stop and think about it.
That's how
we get into the wars, you know?
You spent your entire career in the intelligence arena. You rose to technical director at the National Security Agency. And analysis is, you know, it wasn't your essential skill set. But I'm sure you're aware of the way that intelligence is reviewed. And at every step, a skilled analyst will challenge the assumptions, will challenge the framing, will examine the sources, the quality of the evidence, always looking for holes in the theory that is on the table. But we're not seeing that. It's all of this effort to direct people's thinking, to use innuendo, anonymous sources, and evidence that is not available to the public to assert that these things are true. But that doesn't make them true. And the lack of skepticism in the intelligence community and in the corporate media in this country has reached a new low, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back in history, let's review the bidding here. Let's see, who sunk the Maine, you know?
Yeah.
We went to war there. The Tonkin Gulf affair that didn't happen, we used as a basis to go to war in Vietnam, kill over 1 million people. And then the weapons of mass destruction, we used that as a basis, a false basis, to go and have a war with Iraq and kill 100 or 200,000 people there. And of course, you've got Clapper and Alexander all claiming that we don't spy on Americans, you know, and all of that. And I had to laugh at Senator Wyden asked Alexander, how many U.S. citizens do you have in your databases? He said he'd have to get back to him, and he answered him, and this is on the web, by the way, if anybody wants to get it. He answered him in writing, and he said, we can't tell you that because it would be a violation of the privacy rights of U.S. citizens. I mean, this is hard to believe. They actually put this in print. It's a direct statement that they are violating the Constitution of the United States, the Fourth Amendment, and looking at and without warrants, looking at everybody in the United States.
And Bill, you talk about reviewing the bidding. Let me just offer a friendly amendment. And my source on this is Mel Goodman, who served at the CIA for many years. He published his own whistleblowing book earlier this year. And he recounts the many times that the U.S. intelligence agencies lied specifically about the Soviet Union and later about Russia. And so when you see that history, to watch people in the media today simply take everything that is asserted, not proven, asserted by the CIA and other intelligence agencies at face value is really shocking. We have a massive wave of amnesia that has taken the nation.
Yeah. Well, people have to relearn everything. They don't learn from history. But let me add another thing here. You know, back when I was working the Soviet Union, I had five warning indicators that I used, only those five, and they told me everything was going on. I, you know, hit it on the head every time. And yet those five indicators weren't even in the indicator list used by the intelligence community. So they're making assessments without having the real warning indicators in their list, you know. So I tried to get them in the list there.
Now, explain a little bit about these warning indicators. These are trigger points that indicate that something's going on?
Yes, and any time they were actually physically going to do something in the real world, one or more of these indicators would show up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was true. That was true even for Chernobyl, and for Afghanistan, Czechoslovakia,
mm-hmm.
even the Polish issues, and even some things in the Baltic states.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, any time that something was pending, you know, and they were actually physically doing something, not just training or something, you know.
Yeah.
One or more of those things would show up, and sure enough, you know, you had warning right away. And it was very clear. Factually based decisions create certain events in the real world that you can see and spot, and if you understand what it means, it's very clear that those things are, in fact, real warning.
Bill, have you had any contact from the special counsel's office run by Robert Mueller investigating the alleged meddling in our elections by Russia?
No. Why would he do that? After all, I think he's a criminal, too, for using the Stellar Wind data to arrest people, along with the DEA, right? Using going into the unwarranted collection of data on all U.S. citizens looking for criminal activity, and then using that to arrest people, and then perjuring himself by substituting data. They'd send people out to do a conventional policing investigation. They find the stuff. It's easy once you know where it is, you know. And so that makes it easier for them. Then they substitute that for the NSA data, and that destroys the integrity of our entire judicial process because it's using the testimony of people against themselves without, that's a violation of the Fifth Amendment, and then using it, substitution of information in the court of law. That's perjury in the court of law, denying due process to the defendant. That's a violation of the Sixth Amendment, you know?
Now, I do share your dim view of Bob Mueller. He came out of Northern California. He was the U.S. attorney here. He was sponsored by Dianne Feinstein to become the FBI director, took over right around 9/11, 2001, and I have sharp criticism for the way he ran the agency and the two-year bonus period he was given as director, with no debate or discussion, no accountability for the obvious violations of the national security letters and many other operations of the FBI, including the 15,000 informants that are out there often framing Muslim Americans as alleged terrorists. So you and I agree about Bob Mueller, but if he were conducting a fair investigation of these allegations that the DNC servers were hacked by Russia, wouldn't he be obligated, just as a qualified investigator, to talk to all parties, to explore all possibilities, and that would include talking to you?
Well, I would, of course, agree with that. But, I don't see him in that role.
Mm-hmm.
He was a part of the cover-up all along with all this criminal activity at the government. So why should he change his spots?
Well, isn't that why he was selected as the special counsel?
Yeah, I'm sure it is, yeah.
All right. So we also know that Julian Assange and Ambassador Craig
Murray
have both said that they have not been contacted or interviewed by the special counsel or his investigators. So that leads to sharp suspicions that this is not a balanced and objective investigation, and that it may have some ideas that are already locked in place. So with that as background, to have the CIA director, whether it's at Trump's behest or not, agree to meet with you and to reach out and invite you in, I find that slightly refreshing. And based on his public profile, I'm not a big fan of Mike Pompeo.
No, but I mean, I thought it was still a positive turn of events simply because it was people seeking some evidence, some basic factual evidence,
mm-hmm.
and not opinion. I mean, everybody's been, and the mainstream media is really falling apart. I mean, they're losing it with what they're doing. They don't look for facts anymore. I mean, investigative reporting, I guess, is pretty much dead in the mainstream.
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't seem to be doing anything at all except, basically buying into and regurgitating the narratives out of the intelligence agencies and anybody else in certain parties that advocate certain positions, and they don't challenge anything. especially if it agrees with their opinion, you know.
And Fox has kind of poisoned the idea of fair and balanced as rubrics of journalism. But we're not seeing fairness and we're not seeing balance. Because if that were the case, the New York Times at some point would have talked to you over the last year or so and explored your alternative theories from their point of view.
I basically don't refer to it as a theory. I refer to it as a theorem.
Uh-huh.
Because we've got proof that it is a download locally. It's not a transfer across the network.
Okay. I accept that correction, and I think that's accurate.
But, I mean, who did it? We don't know, right? Because, you see, the point, and here's the real problem, even with all this stuff about allegations that the Russians, program was the one used to hack the DNC or, any of that. All of this stuff has been released by Vault out of Vault 7. to the world. I mean, everybody in the world has access to that attack and has had it for almost a year now, I guess. So that means that you cannot just use the profile of an attack to identify who originated the attack. You have to trace the packets back through the network to where they went. That's what NSA does all the time. So, I mean, NSA, it's the only agency that counts in terms of dealing with hacks and who did it.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them are simply guessing.
Now, take a moment. I know you've discussed this many times, but please thumbnail your theorem and the evidence that you argue supports it.
Okay. Basically, we're just saying it's a local download. It mm-hmm. didn't go anywhere across the net. And we say that because of the data released by Guccifer 2 on the 5 July supposed alleged DNC download.
Mm-hmm.
And that came across over a period of about 14 minutes total, divided into two segments of transmissions of data, about 40 seconds apiece, with about an 11 to 12-minute gap in between. And the total transfer of data across in those two segments, was 1,976 megabytes. That's 8 bits per byte. And it was done, the total collapsing dead time, it was done in 87 seconds, with a average of 22.7 megabytes per second, but the high peak of transfer rate was 38 megabytes per second.
Mm-hmm.
One of the technical guys was with us doing the analysis. His background was in network and network management, including data flow across the web. And he said the web wouldn't sustain that. And we said, okay, we went back and researched what the standard, testing was of the web at that time, and we pretty much agreed. And then there were others who said, well, no, there are other places you could get that. So I said, okay, we're going to test it. That is, I knew some fairly experienced hackers in Europe, and I got their cooperation, and a fellow over here, Chris Hardy, who set up a data set. He put out a gigabit of data, and he said, okay, here's a pile of data. See how fast you can get it across there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did it from various places, mostly in Amsterdam, but two places in Amsterdam. One was a 100 megabit per second home line, and then a commercial DSL in Amsterdam again.
All right.
One, we got 0.8 megabytes per second at home, and a 1.6 megabytes at the DSL, commercial DSL. And then we had other people try. A fellow here tried to transfer the data from a data center in New Jersey to a data center in the UK. And the best he could do there was 12 megabytes per second,
mm-hmm.
which is slightly less than one-fourth the capacity necessary to transfer the data, just the data, not housekeeping, in the 87 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we even went to Belgrade and Albania, and we didn't even try, because the line and capacity of the lines there is even less than in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was our basic evidence showed that we couldn't transfer that data across the network, and therefore it had to be a local download and didn't go across the net.
Now,
I would make, though, uh-huh. Peter, is that NSA has so many traceroute programs on the network, hundreds and hundreds of them, all around the world, and they've got all the collection in the world. Especially in the United States, they have over 100 tapping points in the United States where they're capturing everything off the fiber lines and storing it in places like Utah or San Antonio or NSA over here or various other places. If anything was going across the network, they couldn't. I mean, it's like, could you miss a pig passing through a python? No, it's a big bulge in the middle. That's the kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And all they need is a couple of packets. They don't need the whole thing. Because buried in every packet is the originating and ending, ultimate ending points of the transmission.
Right.
That's the only way the machines know how to get the packets to one place to another in the network.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you explained this to Director Pompeo, I understand that there were two individuals in the room who you only got first names of, but presumably they're cyber experts. Tell us how much you felt Pompeo really grokked what you described, both in terms of the theorem and the argument about the NSA's capability to trace these packets.
Well, I think I think he understood that, but in the high level, I think he was depending on his two people there that, to be able to look at it technically. And they asked some questions like, how do you know the rate and all that? And all, as it, it's, I said, well, it's all done by the timestamping on the data as it's transferred. You know, as the data goes across, it gets timestamped, and you can calculate how much data is going and what the time is that's ended. It's like looking at an oscilloscope and seeing a signal, and then it goes away, and a little bit later seeing a signal again, and it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And each time it's timestamped. So not just at the beginning, but several times it's timestamped periodically to get it. So, I think they understood that. They're going to look at that. And I also referred them, and the big issue was for me, was that the intelligence agencies were lying to the president and basically the administration. And this is not new.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've been doing this all along. Staffers in Congress know this also, if they'll admit it. But I said, you didn't have to believe me. All you had to do was read the DODIG inspector's report 05-intel-03, which is the result of the complaint we made about NSA, corruption, fraud, waste, abuse, and lies. And they proved them all in that report. And it's they're trying to keep that report secret, even from Congress.
So, Bill, in the end, do you feel that Pompeo is going to really objectively look into this? Or do you think that he's trapped politically? He's running an agency that has made these assertions in these fact-free reports last October and in January of 2017. And, of course, he is also in a bit of a pickle with the president, who has been very critical of the intelligence agencies. And Pompeo needs to retain loyalty and credibility with his own employees, at the same time dealing with the political flack.
Yeah, but ultimately, Peter, you know, you have to deal with the truth. I mean, if you deal on lies and deception and things like that and manipulation, then you end up in wars and people get hurt. And those are the kinds of things that happen and have happened in history. I mean, all we have to do is go back to 2003. You don't have to go much further and look around the world, see what we're doing in Yemen or Libya or, you know, Syria or in Africa now. I mean, why are we there, you know? And it must have. What is the evidence and reasons why we're supposed to be there? I'm not. You know, this is all getting very bad. It's like we're never-ending wars we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And intelligence is the big part of, excuse me, why we get into those things.
Yeah. So, Bill, do you think that Pompeo will report to the president? And do you think that Dana Rohrabacher, the congressman from California, who met with Julian Assange and has been trying to get a meeting with either the Chief of Staff, General Kelly, or someone else at a high level in the White House in order to share this information with the president?
Well, you know, any source of, you know, you should at least have people look at the evidence to see. If somebody says they have evidence, you should at least listen.
Mm-hmm.
Just to try to assess the value and validity of it, that's all. I would say that everybody should do that.
So as you look at this now, we have a hardened narrative. I refer to it, at least on the nightly Maddow broadcast, as a telenovela where, you know, they spring new subplots and new characters on a daily basis, but never really prove the central thread of the narrative. It's just, hey, we all agree it's correct. How are we going to pop that bubble?
Well, I mean, it's like you just simply don't walk away and keep asking them, well, where's your evidence for saying that, you know? And nobody's producing any, and they haven't produced anything to date. I mean, even the ICA, the Intelligence Community Assessment, which is really NSA, CIA, and FBI, hand-picked people
right
to do it, they came out and said, even at the bottom of the page 13, they said, judgments made by us are not necessarily do not indicate that we have facts to make something certain,
mm-hmm.
or prove it. You know, so I mean that basically says it right from the beginning. You know, you don't have any evidence to make your assertions.
So, Bill, let's turn now to the coverage of your meeting with Director Pompeo. because I was really stunned when I first saw the article at The Intercept. I said, oh, wow, this is interesting. But it starts with the, you know, the smear in the headline. CIA director met advocate of disputed DNC hack theory at Trump's request. So at the outset, they're poisoning the mind of the reader here,
yep.
claiming that
right.
what you offer is a disputed DNC hack theory.
Well, you see, I also maintain that that just simply shows how weak and false their assertions are, because they can't. Their position isn't backed up by any facts, and the fear of it makes you throw labels at people and try to do an ad hominem attack on them or characterize them badly. So that means you have no basic evidence to justify your position, and it's very weak, and that's the reason they have to do that kind of thing. So, and that's the whole mainstream media. So it basically tells you what kind of mindless dribble they're throwing at the public.
So what was your previous contact with James Risen? Because he is a fairly respected journalist. He had to fight with his editors at the New York Times to get them to finally release the articles he wrote based on NSA whistleblowers. They were finally published in 2005, just in advance of the publication of a book by Risen. But I'm really shocked to see him engage in this level of yellow journalism.
I don't think he had a choice. I mean, he's new to The Intercept, and the editors there filled in a lot of stuff. Like, I don't think he added that business about me being a conspiracy theorist. The editors did.
Mm-hmm.
And there were mixed in things that were thrown in that article that, of course, added nothing new and no factual evidence anyway. It was just emotional agendas being driven into that article that he wrote by the editors
mm-hmm.
and by the people in charge of The Intercept.
Well, and that's Pierre Omidyar, who
yep.
is a little sketchy, and but it's fascinating that in simple terms, The Intercept has been the primary outlet for Ed Snowden's leaked documents, and
yep.
I give them a lot of credit for the publication that they have done. At the same time, you know, by describing you this way and not only dismissing but, you know, really trashing – not only your theorem, but also your reputation, it really strikes me as schizophrenic from The Intercept. You would think that they would see you as consistent with Snowden. After all, his documents proved a lot of the claims that you made to me and other people, you know, once you went public as a whistleblower.
Yeah, but I think I don't look at this as discrediting my reputation. I actually think it's reinforcing it, simply because these are wild assertions that people are doing, and they're obviously wild, okay? So this is nothing that people aren't, I mean, they must think the American people are like Pavlov's dogs, okay? Repetition will get to them, and they will only believe what is repeated over and over again to them. It's like they don't think. They have a very low opinion of the masses in the U.S. It's like Noam Chomsky said, I don't always agree with what he says either, but
mm-hmm.
he gave a quote that pretty much accurately, I think, captures what's going on here. Is that the masses are supposed to, you know, just be present and do what they're told, buy products and live their lives, and the public business is none of their business. If we'll handle that, just don't pay any attention, you know? Just be a zombie, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's most of America still likes to think, and they like to think for themselves, you know? And they're not buying this, I'm sure. I have confidence in them that they're not going to buy this garbage.
Now,
it only adds to my reputation. The more people I discredit, the better off I am, I think.
Okay, I'm glad you look at it that way. You got some pretty thick skin there, Bill. They also interject Seth Rich in a way that is attempting to undermine you. It reads, Binney's claim that the email theft was committed by an insider also helps fuel one of the more bizarre conspiracy theories that has gained traction on the right, that the murder of a young DNC staffer last year was somehow connected to the data theft. Binney said he mentioned the case of Seth Rich to Pompeo during their meeting. Now, Bill, I regard the Seth Rich case as open.
Yep.
I regard him as a potential enabler of the leaked information from the DNC. We have some corroboration of that indirectly from Julian Assange. And we also know that by tagging this as a conspiracy theory, it's like putting kryptonite on it to get people to stay away from it. Don't touch this. And, you know, again, I can't prove anything about Seth Rich. I only feel that this is a case that has not been resolved, and it's one, along with Imran Awan, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, IT guy on Capitol Hill, that these are open cases that should be pursued to a conclusion. And sure. And so to include Seth Rich is in no way out of line, in my view, and it gets tagged as a conspiracy theory because that is a way to get many people to simply dismiss it.
Let me add one thing here.
Mm-hmm.
If you are aware, there's somebody recorded Rich's conversation without him knowing it.
Right.
And that's on the web also. And he basically, Cy Hirsch says he had some informants, he knows a lot of people, so they were telling him things about an FBI report and about the Seth Rich murder. And it came that, this is what he said, you can go listen to it yourself.
Yeah, I've heard it. Mm-hmm.
And he basically says, you know, in Seth Rich's computer, FBI found, there's an FBI report where they found contacts with WikiLeaks and the transfer of emails to WikiLeaks offering many more emails for money.
Right.
And so, you know, if the FBI has that report, they have an obligation to tell people like the president that they've got it, and they're not doing that. Now, this is a real problem, and the FBI was run by Mueller
and Comey.
Comey, mm-hmm. Yeah, and these are the guys. They were both of them go all the way back to, or Comey does, back to the 2004 hospital visit by Ashcroft, mm-hmm. dealing with this domestic spying program, Stellar Wind, which
right.
is what they were running and agreeing to, which is a violation of everybody's constitutional rights too. So. You know, they're all a part of this, and they're all part of this cover-up, and that's why you can't trust any of them.
And, Bill, next, what we are seeing a pattern of now, the Intercept article diverts to smear you because you have appeared on Fox News. It reads, Pompeo's decision to meet with Binney raises the possibility, so this is pure speculation, all right, raises the possibility that right-wing theories aired on Fox News and in other conservative media can now move not just from conservative pundits to Trump, but also from Trump to Pompeo and into the bloodstream of the intelligence community. Now, I'm offended by this in a number of ways, first on your behalf, but also by limiting this to conservative media, because Bob Perry at Consortium News, I don't consider him a conservative, and he has been a sharp skeptic. He has published your VIPS letters on a regular basis, and I feel excluded as well. I am not a conservative or a right-wing crackpot. I am a guy who follows the evidence, and this
right.
is a real signal of speculative bias that is injected into this alleged news report.
Yeah, and it also is being transferred into the universities where they're not allowing different people to speak simply because they're either conservative or they're considered it's not the in-crowd belief, and so you can't be heard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like we no longer have a First Amendment, certainly not in the universities. But outside, we still do in the courts of law, so we still have a chance to say those things publicly. The difference is the mainstream media is trying to direct the narrative so you don't hear anything but their narrative. And any opposition to it in any way being published, they attack. So, I mean, if they were doing something investigative or trying to be at least constructive, you would think that they would at least address factual evidence to counter whatever facts anybody else put forward. And in the case of the Vips memo, no one has produced any evidence whatsoever to contradict anything we've said.
Yeah. One more bite here from the Intercept article. This is by way of introducing a little biography about you. Binney's adherence to a widely disputed theory about the DNC email theft that is favorable to Trump marks a new twist for a retired government employee who has become an outspoken critic of the intelligence community to which he once belonged. Now, this is an effort to smear you and undermine any credibility assigned to you by saying that this is simply enabling Trump to reject the consensus view, which, as we've discussed, is not based on any public evidence. So to describe your theory as widely disputed is truly false, because it hasn't been examined. It hasn't been shared with mass audiences except in the brief moments where it is mentioned for the purpose of discrediting it.
Yeah, right. Well, you can also look at the ICA, the Intelligence Community Assessment, done by the selected people from NSA, CIA, and FBI. And even on page 13 of that report, they discredit themselves by saying nothing. None of our judgments are based on anything that's provable as true as fact. You know, so right there, they're also saying they don't have any facts. So it's not just you know, us asserting that. The only facts we had that we could look at had dealt with the Lucifer 2 data on the 5 July 2016 download, and then also our attempts at transferring data across the Atlantic, just to show how fast could we do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the only facts we have.
You are right. All right, now I want to turn to an article that was posted at the NBC News website under the byline of Ken Delanian. And he says, Pompeo met last month with a former U.S. intelligence official who advocates a fringe theory that the hack of the Democrats during the election was an inside job and not the work of Russian intelligence. Again, the opening sentence there is so loaded as to, you know, shift the reader's point of view to reject anything that follows that is attributed to Bill Binney.
That's right. Yeah, well, it's a standard technique of of coloring the thinking of people by using certain kinds of words and labels. Yeah.
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 The second paragraph.
Typical sophism, okay?
Yeah. Just two paragraphs down. Binney left the agency in 2000. I think that's incorrect. You left in 2001, right?
Yeah, at the end of October, yeah.
Yeah, and has become a self-styled whistleblower, making unsupported claims that the NSA is collecting and storing nearly every U.S. communication. That is not an unsupported claim. Ed Snowden's documents clearly provided the evidence that NBC has not chosen to cover.
That's right. They're characterizing it quite incorrectly. It's like it's a falsehood.
Yeah. All right, on a couple of paragraphs down, it is extremely unusual for a CIA director to meet with someone like Binney, who for years has accused the U.S. intelligence agencies of subverting the Constitution and violating the civil rights of Americans. He has been feted in Europe and elsewhere as a truth-telling whistleblower, but American officials of all political persuasions say his allegations about the NSA are false.
That's a lie, too. Like I say, you have documented evidence. I mean, from the FISA court, the violation of the FISA court, you've got the evidence from Snowden where the FISA court's issuing an order where all the data for Verizon on all of its customers, including something like 110 million U.S. citizens, is given to NSA. I mean, you know, there's all this evidence out there showing that what I was asserting was true, and it became public basically after Edward Snowden came out, But, I mean, I knew all the programs behind it that were being used to do that, because I designed most of them.
Yeah. Now, the next smear is related to the fact that you have given interviews to a range of outlets, but they single out RT, and RT was the subject of, what, about 5 pages in the assessment released on January 6th. The information was clearly dated because it made a reference to Abby Martin, and a show that she had hosted on RT that had ended at least a year before the election. And they tried to really magnify the impact and the reach that RT has in the United States. Now, they have a cable channel that almost nobody watches. They do distribute clips in social media, and I see those occasionally. Last night, a friend on Facebook shared a clip of your recent RT interview with Ed Schultz. And it turns out they also have a sizable audience on YouTube. But the idea that RT had any significant impact on American public opinion or the election in 2016 is just preposterous, Bill.
Yep. Yes, and just think of the First Amendment. We Americans are not supposed to be afraid of free speech. In fact, the less we like the speech, the more we think it needs to be free and open.
Yeah.
You know, that is the First Amendment. So are we afraid of hearing a counter view? We shouldn't be. I mean, Americans have never been afraid to, at least in my memory, have never been afraid to hear different points of view. I mean, now it's turning very ugly, and that position is changing. But it's still why we have the First Amendment.
After the RT hit, this Kendallanian article says he's also been a frequent guest on Fox News and has been often cited by Breitbart News, two right-wing outlets to which Trump pays close attention. Now, again, if anybody at NBC, CBS, ABC invited Bill Binney, my bet is that you would show up and you would tell your story.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think I've been on CNN twice. I was on Frontline once, and that's PBS.
Right.
Nobody else really invited me that much. I'll have to look at my schedule to see how many places I've been, but the mainstream media doesn't really invite me.
Yeah.
So I go wherever I can, that's all.
Yeah, you do, and you've been very accessible for me. You've been very direct, and again, you know, you are not responsible for anything else that I say. You know, you may be responsible for the exchange we have here today, but you're not responsible for anything else I report on or any other point of view that I express. But they are trying to tie you to these entities that have negative perceptions among certain parts of the populace. And this, again, is an effort to marginalize Bill Binney.
They can keep doing their number. I'm sure it's going to make them even look more silly. So, you know, it's up to them. How bad do they want to look?
Yeah. And the final quote from this Delanian article is one that I think is worth reporting. It's a legitimate item. It says that your memo, the VIPS memo, has since been disputed by some members of the group. And yes, it's true that Tom Drake issued a minority report and challenged some of the conclusions that he felt you had reached. And the most fair coverage of these issues has come from The Nation, which brought in an outside mediator who basically evaluated your claims and Drake's claims and published what I thought was a fair evaluation of that exchange. This is that to me is an attempt at real journalism. They're trying to weigh, you know, the different voices, different arguments.
Patrick Lawrence did a good job there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would also point out, though, that the basic facts that we talked about a few minutes ago about the download of data, the rate, and also the fact that it wouldn't go across the web to Europe, are factual. That's factual evidence that nobody has disputed.
Yeah.
There were claims that you could do it, but no one has proven it. We tried different ways, even data center to data center, and we could not achieve it. So if they're going to make that allegation, they need to prove that.
So,
and they have so far not done so.
So you've been very patient in indulging me here in all these smears, Bill, but I have to play for you a clip from the November 8th episode of The Rachel Maddow Show, because this takes Ken Delanian's piece and fuels it with nitroglycerin, and the irresistible smears of linking you to RT are augmented by not just once or twice, three times. She references that you appeared on the Alex Jones Show. Let's listen to this from Rachel Maddow.
This is a man named William Binney. He used to work for the National Security Agency back in the day. He left that job 17 years ago. He's kept very busy, though. Here he is on Russian state-sponsored TV, RT. This is him less than a year ago, explicating his theory that the whole idea that Russia hacked anybody's emails as part of the 2016 election, he expounds the theory that that is a hoax. He says the hack of the Democratic National Committee was actually an inside job. The DNC hacked itself to make itself lose.
Now, Bill, let's just ask you to respond to this. She's dripping with sarcasm there. But
sure.
Have you ever...
That's Rachel for you.
Have you ever alleged that the DNC hacked itself?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, the only thing I said is that it was done locally.
Yeah.
And that it was done... I did mention that Cy Hirsch had said it was done by an inside person, Seth Rich.
Mm-hmm. Seth Rich.
Seth Rich. I got it. Sounded like a guy with two first names.
Right.
At any rate, you know, the whole point was that was something else that somebody else had said. I have no direct evidence of any of that. The only thing I have evidence of is the download of data on the 5th of July of 2016, which had to be local. Couldn't go across the web. We tried it, and it didn't work. And we couldn't achieve speeds anywhere necessary because, you know, there's a lot of housekeeping data that goes with all that. So if you're going to take 16 gigabits of data, you know, you're going to add another 10 gigabits or something like the house data.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets it even much, it makes it even worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that was our experience. We just couldn't get there with that data across the Atlantic. And it was from, we've documented and published that. So if someone says they can do it, okay, go do it. And then show us where you did it and what time, all the time, and how much data you transferred, what was the rate, you know?
Yeah, and let's peer review it. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, I'm open for any evidence that anybody can produce. But so far, nobody's produced anything. That's the problem.
And Rachel smears on.
Here's Bill Binney, not on Russian television, but on InfoWars with host Alex Jones, the guy who says, among other things, that the Sandy Hook shooting was a false flag operation with child actors, and that the government is turning us all gay with chemicals in our juice boxes.
And Bill, just for the record, you've never taken a position on Sandy Hook or juice boxes. Can I...
No, that's correct. No, but, you know, Rachel has her ways. That's her way of smearing people. And, you know, that just shows how weak her position is. Her position is so weak, she has to do that kind of thing.
Well, and if she felt so strong about her position and the narrative that she advances, she would have the confidence to invite Bill Binney on, and she would figure that she would decimate you with her arguments and her command of the so-called facts.
Well, you know, that's what the BIPs members did to us when we were arguing after we published our article. And I said, well, okay, keep giving me some from some basic evidence to show the contrary. And I kept drilling down on every time everyone said something, including Tom Drake. They produced nothing. Every time they said somebody had said, it was always somebody else saying that was true. There was never any substance behind any of it.
Hmm. Interesting.
And so, you know, we just said, you guys, need to get real here. I mean, we need to do the right thing here for the right reasons and know why we're doing it.
All right. A little more from Rachel.
On the Alex Jones Show, Bill Binney laid out his case that the DNC didn't just hack itself. Actually, what happened was that the DNC was hacked by the intelligence community itself to make Donald Trump look bad. And what? No, that doesn't make sense, but it's a very Baroque sort of plot if you think about it, or if you don't think about it, you just let it wash over you.
Now, Bill, is there any shred of truth to that?
Well, I mean, you could say that in the Vault 7, the Marvel program from CIA is meant to mimic Russia or a couple other countries like China and I think Israel. But the point is that if you want to talk about possibilities, it certainly is a possibility they could have used that attack because it would look like exactly what the data is that they have on that attack.
Mm-hmm.
That was the purpose of it. That's why CIA had that, to make an attack and make it look like somebody else did it. So if you want to consider possibilities, that's one.
Yeah, and Vault 7 really is very strong evidence of the ability to stage a hack and make it look like somebody else did it.
And that may be why NSA is not saying anything, but otherwise, I'm saying that NSA has no data that it was hacked because they would know where the packets went because of all their taps on the fiber, on the Fairview program and the Stormbrew program and the Blarney programs. They have over 100 taps inside the United States, you know. And if any of those packets went from the DNC anywhere in the country or outside the country, they would know and be able to see them going. And so they're not talking about anything. So either they have no data, or the data went somewhere, like CIA, for example, or some other agency in the U.S., where they don't want to talk about it.
Also, he insists that the NSA is working to establish a world government, of course.
Well, NSA wouldn't establish the world government, but they would establish the world intelligence community. That's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's done with second-party and third-party relationships. And, of course, Edward Snowden gave a slide of, like, the 33 countries that are third parties, and, of course, the Five Eyes, the first and second-party countries on top of that. So that's like 38 of the countries in the world that are a part of that intelligence community.
But she mangled that and changed it into an idea that kind of echoes some extremist fear of what they call UN Agenda 21, the one world government, and they're going to come and take your guns and tell you how to live and all that stuff.
I have called the intelligence community the Praetorian Guard. They determine who the emperor is and what he does.
Mm-hmm.
As evidenced by Senator Schumer saying what he did on CNN, I think it was,
right,
when he talked about the President Trump should not take on the intelligence community because they've got many ways of getting back at him. That's an indication of the power of the intelligence community.
Indeed.
So, Bill Binney. Last month, Bill Binney was personally interviewed one-on-one for an hour by the director of the CIA. Because the director of the CIA apparently felt that Bill Binney's theories, which he has expounded upon on RT and InfoWars,
the
director of the
reference.
CIA felt that Bill Binney's theories merit the attention of the head of America's premier spy agency for an hour, one-on-one. Why would he do that? Well, according to Bill Binney, the CIA director, Mike Pompeo, called him in for this meeting. This was first reported by The Intercept. It's now been confirmed by NBC News. And Bill Binney tells NBC News that Mike Pompeo told him he called him up, asked him to come into Langley for his meeting, quote, at the urging of President Trump. So President Trump has asked the CIA director to take that meeting with Bill Binney. If only Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo had, like, intelligence resources, some sort of intelligence community they could call on to gather factual evidence about whether Russia hacked the DNC. Guess they don't, so instead they just get the guy from RT and InfoWars.
Now, this is really defining to me, Bill, because Rachel Maddow is instructing her viewers to have uncompromised faith in the CIA and, by extension, the entire intelligence community. And we gave a litany earlier in the conversation here about many of the obvious failings and the intentional deception that have been visited on the American people by our intelligence agencies.
Also the Congress, also Congress.
So by saying that, Bill Binney from RT and InfoWars, which is not where you're from, has better information than all of these people who are neutral finders of fact, I think that really tells us a whole lot about Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, but also says something about the intelligence community, too. They either have no facts, they're distorting facts, or they're simply lying about what they know and what they don't know. If Cy Hirsch is saying, they're just simply lying to the president and everybody else. They've got more information they're not telling anybody about.
So given the complicity, really, and the lockstep of most members of the Republican caucus, and that they control both houses, the Senate and the House, do you see a way to really, advance the information, get the evidence to support your theorem, and to debunk the conspiracy theory, the consensus conspiracy theory? Or do you think that this is one of those things that's going to linger with many people convinced of the Russiagate narrative?
I would like to see it continue simply because it's making everybody look really bad. Because every time they say something like Rachel or anybody else, they don't back it up with anything. So it's a really shallow statement from her and no substance whatsoever, and yet she claims that it's, this has to be the way. Again, this is getting back to the sophistic technique of repetition makes something right.
Yeah.
And that goes back to ancient Greece with the school of sophism. I'm familiar with that. So it's been practiced by many dictators and despots down through history. I mean, even Adolf Hitler said, if you're going to tell a lie, make it a big one, tell it often until it's believed. And the idea and the concept of having somebody in a position of supposedly power and authority tell you something just by the fact they're telling you it and over again must be true. You know, that's the concept of indoctrination. That's the same thing that Pavlov did with his dogs.
Yeah. Well, and I remember a soundbite from George W. Bush where he was captured saying, yeah, you got to catapult the propaganda and then just repeat it over and over again.
That's right. It's a standard practice by sophists.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, people who have a false argument and hide it simply by repetition.
Well, Bill, thanks for taking the time to talk with me today. Is there anything you'd like to add about this that we haven't covered so far?
No, except that, I would comment that it's a sad state that the reporting reporters and the media, the mainstream media anyway, is taking this route instead of trying to clean up their act and do a proper job investigating what our government's really doing and why, and tell us they're failing their First Amendment responsibility. And it's just a sad state of affairs. I mean, it's something that, I mean, that's why I end up in various places talking with you or others on the cable networks, simply because mainstream media is trying to control the narrative so they can control the thinking of the of America and the population of America, most of it anyway.
Yeah. Well, and Bill, I speculate that if this bubble is burst, that it will give Trump a tremendous advantage, and
oh, yeah,
it will diminish the standing of the mainstream media in this country for some period of time until some sort of trust might be reestablished. But I'll close by saying that I've advanced the cantilever, the law of cantilever in this case. I had a deck that was falling down, and when I brought a contractor in, he said, well, Peter, you know, the problem is they violated the law of cantilever, which is that for an unsupported deck to jut out from a house, you have to have twice the length of the deck in support beams that run into the house. And my reference here, the metaphor is that this is a deck that is going to collapse, because it doesn't have sufficient evidentiary support, either in the form of posts or of internal beams. And I think it's going to be a nasty crash when that deck collapses.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's going to, I think the Democrats are going to really suffer by this, too.
Yeah. Bill Binney, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Peter.
Another fascinating conversation with Bill Binney. You can search for the preceding interviews at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until